Okay, everyone, this is ACS. My name is Roy, and this is the Mymar Technical Net. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we do this. It's been done for about 39 years now. Dick, A2RIW, did it for 38 years. Unfortunately, he became Island Key, and so I'm doing it now. So, everyone, let me drop for a second, and I will tell you the usual I like people to be aware of. Okay. If you can't reach me by the radio, email is the best next method. That's either for a mailbag question or topics of discussion that you'd like to hear discussed on the radio. Or if you have a technical puzzle that you would like to share with me. I like to take technical puzzles that suggest deeper insight into how things work. That doesn't seem to be obviously true, but if you think it's true, it works. And expand as much as I can and into it as a lesson to figure out or remind people of principles that they were taught. So if you have anything like that, or if you would like me to tap Paul on the shoulder for a space-related, NASA-related bit of news, that too is a good idea. You use the email address mailbag@ac2gs.com. One sec, let me drop for a second. Okay. I will maintain, as always, a series of links to interesting articles, YouTube. I have a book review section. I have all kinds of interesting things. It remains up 24/7. Sometimes it's based on some of the articles that I collect for the Science Talk segment that we usually don't have time for. So if I don't get to any of them, you could read them on your own. The link page is available. Just type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you to the link page. We have a chat room available. You can either go to Limar's own website, and the link is available there, or you can just type into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you to the chat room. I stream audio, hopefully, of the technical net and of Limar's Glen Oaks repeater 24/7. Most of the time, it's down for repairs every so often, but most of the time you can hear it. Type in your browser technet.ac2g.com, and that will bring you to the audio stream. Again, that's technet.ac2g.com. And, of course, I want to remind people that MikeAC2NJI has a wonderful archive of amateur radio at his website, amateurradio.tv, of technical nets that go as far back as September of 2006, with a lot of great wisdom from past hosts of this technical net and co-hosts. So please avail yourself of it. Let me drop for a second, and I will tell you my plans for tonight. Okay, I will ask if anyone has any questions of a technical nature and take names. So I'll ask you to give me your first name and your call sign. I'll put you on a list, and we'll try and get to the list in an orderly fashion. If we run out of amateur radio technical topics, I'll open the floor to any general science, technology, medicine questions. Again, I do not diagnose or treat over the radio, but if there are general questions about such things, I can try my best to address them. We could talk science. I always enjoy talking science. If we have any more time, I'll bring back the science talk with a few interesting articles that I've collected over the last week, so they're rather timely. Again, you can see them on my link page. And that should bring us to 10:15 or so, and I will call upon Paul, WS2N, to give us the SpaceNet report, which will bring us to about 11 p.m. I'll return and tie a bow on it, wish you all well, and call it a night until the following week. So if the repeater, if my radio, if my amplifier, if my microphone, if my push-to-talk button all don't fail me, that's the plan for tonight. So I will let it drop right now, please. Anyone out there with any questions of a technical nature, give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2OGD, I don't really have much, I'll just listen.
KD2UAH, Bravo.
Okay, Craig, thank you for listening. And Rocco, I have you down on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
NY28, Tony.
Okay, Tony, I got you on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, unfortunately, you're about 95% noise, so if you could either raise the output on your radio or play around with the antenna, put it in a slightly different orientation, maybe we can hear it. Okay, nothing heard. Maybe a little bit later that gentleman will be able to fix his transmission problem and we'll be able to hear his question. So Rocco, JD2UAEH, you have a question or a comment for tonight?
Hi, good evening, boys, and everyone on the net. Yeah, my question is this. I've hooked an SWR meter to the radios in my car, and I noticed that using what I think is a resonant antenna, the SWR can vary fairly dramatically when working within the same band. So when I'm on the Linemark, let's say frequency, I'm going to let it drop. So the SWR might vary anywhere between 1.1 to like 1.6, 1.7 within the same band. And I can understand, you know, if we switch to the 70 centimeter band, there might be a difference of the resonance of the same antenna. But it doesn't even work in a linear fashion. I can have, you know, a frequency that's slightly higher, and the SWR will jump up. And then I can go to a frequency that's even higher than that, and the SWR will go down. I don't understand why it doesn't work in a linear fashion, even if the antenna wasn't resonant. Back to you in the net.
Okay, that's curious. Now, I assume that you just basically changed frequencies, looked at the standing wave ratio meter, that you don't have access to something cool like a VNA, where you could sweep the entire frequency. Because usually when you sweep a frequency, it's not as complicated as it sounds. So there might be something else going on with an interaction between your transmitter, your standing wave ratio meter, and your antenna. Do you have access to any kind of a VNA?
No, I don't, but I could get one. I'm amassing a little equipment at a time. Right now, I'm just using the basic SWR meters. You know, it was like a $100 SWR meter. I haven't gotten into that, but I will if that will help me diagnose what's going on.
Yes, Wesley, recognize. One second, and I'll turn it over to you, Wesley. I hate to sound like I'm promoting stuff, because I'm really not. I don't get any money from any of this, but a lot of other people, including myself, have purchased these nano VNAs. You know, depending upon the version number and the size of the screen, they range from about 2.5-inch diagonals to 4-inch diagonals. They go at around 50 to about 85 bucks. And, you know, for that amount of price, you know, you can't go wrong. So that'll give you probably a much clearer view of what's going on with the actual antenna resonance and the impedance with changes over a frequency range. Wesley, you wanted to add something?
What is the bandwidth of the antenna?
Leslie, I've experienced this on several antennas. I've experienced it anywhere from a 2 meter 440 mag mount to even my X51 Diamond that I have at home. I even have a Comet CX333 because I do some 220. So it mathematically it amazes me, because on every band I notice that the SWR will vary, but again, not in a linear fashion. So my frequency, let's say 146.250, that we broadcast is a certain number. The Sheldon one, I'll let it drop. The Sheldon frequency. frequency is a higher frequency, so 147. So let's say the SWR goes up a bit. Then I go up to a frequency that's even higher than the Selden frequency, so you would think the SWR would go up a little bit more if that mathematically worked out, but it doesn't. And I've observed this on three or four different antennas, and I have about five radios that I've observed this on too, so I was wondering if there was some kind of mathematical reason why the resonance would change when nothing else there is. I've introduced no other variables.
Okay, so we eliminate the cost of the bandwidth of the antenna because it's not linear. You may say that for any vertical antenna, the part of your car is you can't afford. And here you have a problem, intermediate problem. Do you agree with me, Dr. Roy?
WY2.
WY2U?
Hi, Roy. Yeah, this is Mike. I hope you can hear me okay. First of all, let me just find out if I'm making it because I only have an indoor setup at the moment.
Yeah, you're making it, Mike.
Okay, very good. I'm just wondering, in all of these antennas that, oh gosh, I forget the fellow's name, Tony, has measured, do these antennas perhaps have any internal matching circuits that we may know about, like sub-tuning or series inductance or LC matching circuits, because they would introduce an impedance variable that may not be monotonic. So I'm just wondering if you could tell me if he knows if any of these antennas employ their own matching. Go ahead.
I don't think they are. They're just basically by the length of them. They're standard antennas that one would buy a Diamond or a Comet. Small antennas are about 26 inches, and then my tri-band antennas about 40 plus inches, close to 20. And then the Diamond that I'm on right now is a resonant antenna for 22 meters and 440. It's about a 6 foot antenna. And as I said, it's curious that using a bunch of different radios that I've observed, it's switching, you know, trying to find out what the variables might be, that it doesn't go up or vary in a linear fashion. I could get 1.1. I'll let it drop. I can get 1.5 on the next higher frequency, and then the frequency that's up even higher than that in the same band, the SWR could go back down to 1.2, 1.3. So it doesn't make sense to me, because if there were variables, you would think that within the same band, you know, as the frequency changed, the SWR would vary also up or down in a linear fashion, but it does back to the same.
Yeah, okay, Tony, I understand. I'm in the antenna and the co-antenna, and I really depend on how they best the phase in development. Probably at least an inductor will have to be more complicated. I'm in the antenna, you may not want to call it a matching circuit, but it is a phasing circuit that might have monotonic response for three. Wesley pointed up another topic to do is you're also depending on the environment where the antenna is mounted in, and this would be most likely the car. Not being a monotonic, if you are at all frequencies, you're in the ground plane, perhaps it's the roof of the car or whatever. So if you single out the antenna, you have to consider that you have the system, what it's mounted on, where it's near. I get the idea. That's enough. That's my concern.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike. Yeah, I agree both with Mike and Wesley. It's the antenna system as opposed to just the antenna. The counterpoise is a component, the grounding, all aspects of it. And so although the antenna might not be causing it, it sort of depends on the design. If every single design is demonstrating something like that, it kind of makes it more likely that there's something going on for some strange reason with the counterpoise rather than having a direct connection. It's having some kind of complicated capacitive coupling going on. So maybe that's introducing some complexity. It's not really quite a linear relationship. It's more of an elliptical one, but still. You kind of used to it going down to the minimum at residence and then straight up. Over time, it goes up and down and up and down, becomes a little bit more complicated, but within a certain band, that's kind of strangely unusual. So all of these tests, were they done using the same type of a counterpoise? Again, was it a mobile antenna, or were these different types of antennas? Some were mobile, some were stationary, what have you?
Yeah, there were no variables other than the two antennas that I have for the car. One is a Comet, one is a Diamond, and they're not expensive, but they're just 2 meter, 440 antennas. Did not vary the antenna within the same within the different antennas, rather. I observed the same phenomena. And then when I was home, I noticed the same phenomena even on the outdoor X51, I believe it is, the Diamond antenna that I use at home that I'm on right now. I noticed that if I have with radio, the SWR will vary as I change frequencies, and I can hook up my 991 unit, so I notice the same thing. I have an any tone hooked up to it, I notice the same phenomenon. So, I don't know, I was just wondering, curiosity, if there was some sort of mathematical relationship that, you know, would cause that to happen.
How do you make a switching between the two antennas that you have on the car?
This is Katie to you, age for ID. Wesley, I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question. Can you repeat it, please?
How do you manage switching between those two antennas that you have on a car? I assume that both of them are for 70 centimeters and 2 meters.
No, I wasn't clear. No, I have one antenna that is a combination 2 meter, 70 centimeter antenna. I have two of them, one car, one in the other. And I observe the same phenomenon. So if I go to 146, let's say, the Landmark frequency, the SWR might be 1.1. If I tune in on the Selden frequency in the same car, same radio, same antenna, the SWR might jump up to 1.5, 1.6 when I'm in the same spot. If I go up to another frequency that's 147 and a little bit higher, you would think that it would jump up a little bit more, but instead it goes back down to like 1.2. So that's why I'm confused, because I thought it was a linear relationship. So as you went up in frequency, the SWR might vary, but my question is, why does it go up and then go back down again, even as you go higher in the frequency?
2GJE. 2GJE.
This is Kitty 2UAH. I'm listening.
Okay, guys, I got bad news for you. I have a neighbor, nice guy. He seems to be operating Simplex on 520, and with the state of the antenna over at Glen Oaks, he's completely knocking my signal out. So he's desensing me and full quieting me. So for periods of time that he converses, I can't hear any of you guys, unfortunately.
2GJE.
Yes, Ed.
Good evening. I think we have some variables here. A, you're changing the frequency. B, unless the line, the coax, from the transmitter to the antenna is a half wave at a particular frequency, it does what's happening at the antenna. As you change frequency, of course the SWR varies, because sometimes the antenna is too long, sometimes the antenna is too short. But as you change frequency, the coax moves the SWR around a half wave at the frequency that you're transmitting, and the combination of being at the base of the antenna can give you some false SWR readings. Over.
Yeah, I want to thank you for the explanation, 2GJE. I don't know if if we're able to hear from the net control. But thank you, this is David QUAH. That was a great explanation. I appreciate that.
Hello again, guys. I'm sorry. You know, my neighbor kind of blew me out. He was pumping out 50 watts, and he's a block away. So hopefully I can hear you now. Let's give it a try.
Good evening, Roy at K2GJE. I gave him an explanation. I think he understands it, and he said thank you. Over.
Okay, I don't want to have you repeat yourself, but if you could kind of sum it up quickly so I could stay on, you know, on the beat with everyone else.
Okay, I'll repeat it anyway. I think it's worthwhile repeating. Variables. He's changing frequency based upon where he wants to contact somebody or what net he wants to get into. Sometimes the antenna may be exactly right, and sometimes the antenna may be too short or too... However, the only time the SWR at the base of the antenna is going to reflect exactly back is when that coax from his rig to the base of the antenna is at that frequency one-half wave. On all frequencies that he uses, the coax moves SWR around, and it gives you false readings.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so basically you're saying that's an aspect of the impedance rotation of the coax cable only.
Actually, like sometimes if you do operate a particular frequency and you want to make some changes, just by adding a stub to the coax, you can move the SWR around. And a true reading. It means at your SWR meter, you have a good match. However, what's happening up there at the antenna? It's not the same because the coax is not one-half wave over.
Okay, that's interesting, but I mean, if you ran a VNA on that entire antenna system, you would still see those odd multiphasic type of things going on, wouldn't you?
That'll tell you the characteristic of that antenna. I guess if you ran the test at the base of the antenna, it'll give you a curve of that antenna. However, as soon as you start to introduce odd lengths of coax, you move the SWR around.
Okay, I guess that could possibly be it. I mean, I pulled out, I have a VNA sweep of my Shacks antennas. So I pulled out my GP3 and I'm looking at it, and it's a nice smooth curve. It's not corrected for the transmission line. In other words, I just set the standard short, open, and 50 ohm impedance at the input of the VNA. So it includes analysis of the entire transmission line. And there's no multi-phasic type of odd impedance jumping all around. But I guess it's possible. It'll be interesting if Rocco does get access to a VNA, what the sweep actually visually looks like.
Intuition.
Yes, Wesley?
Yeah, that was an interesting comment. Interesting comment. It puzzles me. I'm completely confused. It doesn't matter what the length of the coax. Coax is not active part of the antenna. At any point of coax, at any length of coax, you have a 50 ohm. And you can check it out easy. You connect the resistor 50 ohm to any length of the coax, and you're going to have 100% of the dissipation of power. correct me if I'm wrong, and to exit.
Yes, Mike.
Leslie, no, you're not wrong, but I want to correct the other gentleman who lying that XRVSWR changes coax length. It absolutely does length the coax. And I am talking about a brushless coax and a coaxial cable that is close to brushless. But XRVUR is independent of coax length, like what you may hear on that thread. Let me drop it. What sometimes does happen, and I'm not convinced it will happen in this case, Tony's case, because it hasn't been through a deal. Sometimes RF keeping on the shield gets the strange results and look like when you change coax look stable. But that's not what's really going on. What's going on there is energy is traveling on a point in the system which should not be there. Work out the mathematics. VSWR does not change the cable length. It does.
Okay, Wes, did you get that? I mean, we got into this a few times before. A coaxial cable is 50 ohms. But what happens, and if you attach that's designed for 50 ohms of its, but if you connect that 50 ohm line, even, there is a transformation that can occur that is liquid. So it rotates. This is useful when you have a antenna tuner that's running an additional jumper cable to rotate the impedance back into the range that the antenna tuner can actually transform. So sometimes you might not be able to tune something up, and with a little extra, that's only when you have a non-resonant antenna that's not 50 ohms.
Somebody's keying along with you. KD2FIU monitoring.
Okay, we're just doing something on my radio, and I'm sorry, I lost part of your explanation. So, could you please repeat?
Okay, well, let me see if I can find someone who dropped the carrier first. Okay, supposedly whoever dropped the carrier. This is kind of a weird thing that I got going on. I got a neighbor a block away. He dropped down to about 5 watts, but he's still a block away, so he's still kind of desensing things. Let me try once again, very quickly. I was just mentioning that a 50-ohm coaxial cable is a 50-ohm coaxial cable. And if you connect it to a 50-ohm load, no matter what the length of the cable is, you have the same exact impedance. It doesn't affect it at all. Aside from what some people on 75 meters talk about, the optimum length of a coax cable. If, unfortunately, you're dealing with a non-resonant system, which is not a 50-ohm load, then the distance of the transmission line, depending upon its relationship to frequency of what you're receiving or transmitting, will rotate its impedance. And to a degree, that goes back to stories that I've mentioned before, that I've had times where my antenna tuner could not transform the impedance correctly for a given transmission, but by adding an additional length of jumper cable, rotated the impedance in such a way that the antenna tuner now could correct for it. So I was just saying that though a 50-ohm transmission line length is kind of immaterial for a resonant system, for a non-resonant system, it can produce some interesting rotations of impedance phases and stuff. Yes, David?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everyone. You know, I have two antennas on my roof. Dual band, 100 feet in LMR 400, and HF, 100 feet of RG 213. I was playing around with the jumper cable on the HF system, and, you know, unexpectedly, when I tighten certain things, or lengthen certain things, or shorten certain things I got better results, you know, and I was told that, you know, the distance between the tuner and the radio, you know, shorter the better, and what's it say, the distance between the connection of the coaxial cable coming through the window and to the tuner. Also had some effect on the SWR. So I experimented trying to get the best results. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I remember when we had that conversation. I was just alluding to it as a kind of an echo of the fact that when you go down to 75 meters, there's a whole bunch of people who will start telling you that there is an optimum length for your coax cable, that you should measure it by, you know, a quarter of a wave, a half wave, what have you, that they're a magic length. And what Mike was kind of restating was the fact that that's not really a real thing. The length can affect the RF in a non-resonant system. And so, you know, that's a truism, but it got spun out of control by the people who now tell you that there's a magic length that the transmission line should be to work properly. So that I was just harking back upon those discussions that we had.
That's an issue.
Yes, Wesley?
In case of our gentleman having two antennas, one on 70 centimeters, one on 2 meters, we're dealing with 50 ohm antenna. The coax cable, despite its length, should not affect in form you were trying to describe. I'm still confused. And to a ship.
Well, again, if it was all in 50 ohms, I would agree with you. But if it's non-resonant and it's now off 50 ohms of impedance, then it is, I guess, possible given a certain length, that there might be some kind of additional little feature going on with the rotation of the non-50 ohm, non-resonant impedance off of resonance. Again, this is kind of theoretical as far as I'm concerned. I'm looking at my own sweep of my own UHF VHF antenna, and I can't really demonstrate an abrupt shift in the curve. It's a very, very shallow curve with its resonant point being the lowest, and the impedance goes up on either side of its resonance lowest impedance level. So I'm not seeing it in my sweep. This is kind of, more of a theoretical construct. And I would love to take a look someday if Rocco is able to do it, to get a VNA sweep so that we can kind of see what the real curve really looks like. You know, it might simply be some weird problem with the measuring technology. His standing wave ratio meter, some of them are not as well calibrated as others, and they give aberrational kind of results sometimes. So it may simply be measuring error.
WA2DDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, generally in speaking, if the line is lossless, then, as you say, in non-resonant, the only thing that the line will do is rotate the impedance around the circle on that Smith chart. The SWR is proportional to the radius of that circle. And it's a circle, so the radius stays the same. The impedance rotates to all kinds of complex values, but they all have the same SWR. If the line is lossy, then the SWR gets lower and lower as the line gets longer and longer, because you're losing signal down and back on the line. So it makes the SWR look better and better, because you're losing signal along the way. So that's pretty much what happens. And you can see that on the Smith chart. When you have a lossy line, you don't get a circle. You get a spiraling in towards the 1 plus J0 point. So it makes things look better and better because it's like a leaky garden hose, those leaky drip hoses. You're losing signal down and you're losing signal back. So when you do the forward to reflected comparison, it looks better and better with lossy lines.
That was a great answer. Thank you.
I concur 100%, John. That's the way.
Okay, well, we're all in agreement. I agree with you. The rotation is such so that the visual is going to probably be about the same. And we weren't really talking about changing the length. In Rocco's case, it was changing the frequency. So, yeah, that wouldn't account for it. So I'm still thinking that there's something going on either with the... with the counterpoise or the measuring equipment. This is all being measured, I think, on the same watt meter. Is that the case, Rocco?
Yes, boy. I have two watt meters. They're not very expensive. They're maybe about $80 to $90 a piece. One is an analog. It's called an RS-40. They're kind of popular. The other one is the same kind of watt meter company, and it's an RS-50. And I've noticed the same phenomena. I've tried to eliminate variables and keep just my observations without as many variables as possible. Example, same antenna. They're both dual band. One's a common, one's a diamond. And at home I have an X50 diamond base station. So I've kept the antenna the same, the cable the same meter, same radio, and I've noticed that this phenomena occurred when the only variable was the frequency, and I was expecting that it would occur in a linear fashion, up or down, but it did not. That's what surprised me. So back to the next.
WB2AHK, my two cents.
Yeah, Jeff, please.
All right, I'm going to make it more simplistic in my head. Let us say, on this frequency, you have 1.5 to 1, and you move downward, and it got worse. It went higher or lower. That's understandable. It doesn't have to be 1.5 lower. It could be 2 to 1. It could be 1.1 to 1, and you move downward. Now, conversely, if you move upward, and you had 1.5 to 1 at 146.850, and you move upward now, you might, let's say for argument's sake, it could get worse, better. It could be 1 to 1 if you move higher. So, in other words, what I'm saying is, it depends on your starting point. You start at 146.850, and as you go lower, the SWR moves in a certain direction, better or worse. Then if you go higher in frequency, the SWR could stay the same if it's a broadband antenna, or it can go up or higher or lower SWR. It depends on your starting point. And just give you an indication that if the SWR goes to 1.1 to 1 or something, that's the spot where the antenna might be the best residence. That's all. Over.
Comment?
Yeah, please comment. I mean, it sounded as though Rocco was reporting that it goes up and down and up and down, and so that speaks of a much more complicated, multi-phasic type of relationship rather than a kind of a smooth curve. But please, comment.
A comment. Yes, this is Rocco, KD2, UAH. Well, yes, I understand what the last gentleman said. You would think that if you step down from 146.850, it would go down, let's say. You step down a little more, it goes down a little more. You go in the other direction, maybe it gets better. You go a little higher, it gets even better yet. But that's not what I observed. And what I'm starting to think is the maybe calibration of the equipment itself. So I will get DNA and do that, because it wasn't going up and down in a linear fashion. That's the conundrum that I had. If it went up or down within the same band in a linear fashion and nothing changed other than the frequency, it would make perfect sense. You know, all these other variables that we're discussing, impedance, et cetera. But when you go up a notch and it gets better, you go up another notch and it gets worse, then you go up another notch, it's not going up and down linearly. So that's my concern, and I'm wondering if it's just aberration from the measurement equipment itself. That's what I'm thinking myself after listening to everyone. Back to the next.
the word to you.
Yes, Mike.
Okay, Rocco, I'm sorry. Rocco, if I could ask you a question. Do you have access to, let's say, a BNC-type reconnector and maybe some precision BNC 50-ohm termination? Do you have access to that, to those are items?
Yeah, I do. I actually have a BNC connector that comes off my 705, and then it goes to one of those WinCam, I think it's called, that converts the BNC from the 705 to a SO239. Yes, I do.
Well, I'm not talking about a BNC. I'm talking about a BNC connector. Common 90 degree offset female. So you can put two coax cables on this particular item. Do you have one of them?
No, I don't, but I'll get one. If it'll help me understand what's going on. Back to Nick.
Well, it might. I can give you a quick and dirty poor man's way to calibrate your antenna analyzer. What I was planning on having you do, if you can get a hold of this BNC connector that I'm talking about, and at the same time get a hold of 250 ohm precision type termination, what I'm going to ask you to do is take two precision terminations, put them on both sides of the BNC connector, so that you've got 250 ohm resistors in parallel, totaling up to 25 ohms on the drop. So if you want me to, you know, if you need an SMA to BNC type of an adapter, so be it. What you should see then is a fairly constant 2-to-1 VSWR across the entire frequency range of this instance. If you start seeing it depart dramatically above or below 2-to-1, that might indicate that you do indeed have an instrumentation problem. Does that make any sense to you, Rocco? Go ahead.
Okay, I understand. I will give that a try. And I'll try to have that done during this week. Thank you. Back to Nick.
Okay, very good. WRC. Go ahead, Rick.
Okay, I mean, theoretically, you could also, if you had a 50-ohm dummy load, you could connect a 50-ohm dummy load and run it through the different frequencies and see if that gives you a legitimate one-to-one standing wave ratio on your meter.
Yeah, that may not just be the whole story, though, Roy. I wanted them to put at least a slight mismatch on the DNA because it could have been calibrated nicely into a match load, and it could be very much off into a mismatch. That's why I was asking him to put a 2-1 rather than a 2-1.
E2 SCP?
Yes, Chris.
Good evening. Just two comments. First, the gentleman with the issue, I think his name is Rocco. I've got a extra nano DNA. I was going to list it tomorrow on the swap and shop. So if you want to listen in there, you can get it. It's cheap. Bucks or something. Secondly, to get rid of the problem with the cable you guys were discussing, the feed line, the best way to use a VNA or another analyzing tool is at the end of the feed line instead of at the base of the antenna. And then you're taking feed line, I guess, out of the equation, or you're looking at the whole antenna system rather than just the system. It's kind of how I understand it. But if you listen to Swap and Shop tomorrow, I'll throw that VNA up. Grab it and have a look at your stuff. Take your SCP.
Okay, very good, Chris. So, Rocco, if you're interested, you could look Chris up. He's K2STP. I think we're sort of circling the fact that the watt meter is the most likely reason for this erroneous set of numbers. I mean, he'll be curious to see what happens.
Okay, thank you, Roy. And I will, I'll try to listen in tomorrow night, but I am interested in that VNA. So if I can log on tomorrow night, what George does in that, I will certainly purchase that. Thank you very much. Back to the net. And thank you for your help, Roy, and everyone else's comments. Back to the net.
Well, thank you, Rocco, for bringing this to us. It was an interesting topic, and thanks to everyone who participated. I just want to add that you don't necessarily have to wait until tomorrow. If you think that this might be something that you're interested in, you can contact Chris via email and do the deal ahead of time. Because if you really think that you might want to do it, better to do it early than to do it late and be the second guy to try and buy it. So just keep that in mind. But Rocco, I wish you luck with all this, and please, please, please come back and tell us what you discovered so that we could learn something. Okay, very good. Now our next person, Tony, NY2A. What's your question or your comment for tonight, Tony?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everyone. Yeah, more of a comment and or update. I guess it was 2 weeks ago I was talking about putting together a trap, and I got to noon, and I did just something interesting came up, actually. Sweeps are on my QR today. If you want to take a look at it over there. And I fully expected that at its length, well, what I did basically was I cut the wire by itself to 20 meters as best I could, and then took a second reading after I attached just the trap to it. Nothing exactly as I expected it to be, but for extra added length of the wire wrapped around the toroid next to it, which makes perfect sense. When I look at it, the fact that you can actually dip caused by the resonance of the fat placed by the upper end of the band. So, and it sort of actually relates to Rocco's situation. He said that you can't have a nonlinear WR curve because of the trap or some other facet of the antenna component.
Yeah, I agree that some antennas are much more complex than others, and certainly traps add a whole level of complication. Just that I think that the particular antennas that that Rocco was experimenting with are rather simple. Even the things like GP3s and GP6s, which are stacked collinear, are designed in such a way that they don't really demonstrate the aberration that you see with your trap, which is a very nice illustration. Everyone, if you got a computer by, go over to NY2A's QRZ page, and he has them very nicely illustrated there. That's interesting. So you demonstrated that. Did you complete your trap antenna, or is it still in the midst of construction?
I got a late start on it, so right now it's, I went to a local park so I could get a big wide open area in my backyard. So right now it's just the wire with the trap attached to it. Probably tomorrow afternoon I'll go back to park and put the second leg on it and get back up to, what I'm hoping this will be, will be a quad-band 84, actually quad-band 84, went for a tour about the 15 meter trap and I throw down it. So we'll see and then see for everybody.
Okay, very good, Tony. It sounds very interesting. So I'm looking forward to future illustrations. I guess you'll put them up on your website. You know, you should consider the possibility. I usually write for the Limark. I assume you're a member of Limark. I usually write for the Limark newsletter. Lately, I've been kind of lazy. But something like this would be very educational. So you might want to kind of scoop it together and put some words around it and teach a bunch of hams new tricks.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but I am keeping a notebook just for my personal reference. The framework of an article there as well. So that actually might be something interesting to do. So I will definitely keep that in mind. I'll propose it. And for anybody that's actually looking at the chart, the blue trace was just the wire alone. And then the red trace is the wire with the trap attached to it. Now the frequency of resonance dropped down probably about 500 kilohertz. That sharp dip is the resonance point of the trap itself on the trace.
Okay, very good. I'm looking forward to future installments of this story.
Very good, Roy. I'm glad you're interested, and hopefully everybody else is. And back to that, and have a great evening, everybody, and one quick.
Okay, very good. Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limar Technical Mess. Going from 8 o'clock on, and if anyone has any technical questions at this point, please hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign, and I'll put you on our little list.
Oh, yeah, BDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Oh, yeah, you can put me on the list. I have just a comment about if anybody is interested in low-frequency monitoring.
Me, Wesley, I'm interested. I'm in it. I'm on it.
Okay, yeah, put me on the list.
Okay, John, consider yourself on the list. I have a sense it's going to be a short list, but we'll see. Anyone else interested in asking a technical question, amateur radio related, please give me your first name and your call sign.
KG2RY, David.
David, you officially on the list as well. Anyone else want to get on the list for tonight for any technical questions? Please give me your first name and your call sign.
NYQ, I just one quick other comment as well.
Okay, I mean, is it a real short comment? Do you just want to hit us with it, or do you want to wait online?
2 seconds. All I was going to say is for some reason Rocco isn't able to connect with that DNA purchase. I'd be happy, probably about 20 minutes away from you, I'd be happy to go over there myself and speak to the antenna together. So if he's listening and interested, and they can just hit me up on the QRS. Thanks again, NY3. Clear.
Okay, very good, Tony. So, Rocco, you got more than one option there. So that's good. Anyone else who wants to be put on the list, please give me your first name and call sign.
To GJE, there's a couple of ways of checking SWR meters, over.
Okay, Ed, since it's the old topic, we might as well pick it up and, you know, we'll hold off a little bit, and John and David didn't say that they were in a rush, I hope. So, Ed, what other ways would you suggest?
Certainly, you should get a 2-to-1 SWR. I never tried it myself. Reverse the input and the output, and you should get the same SWR, over.
Okay, I don't know what the... Does that really demonstrably tell you whether you have a broken SWR meter? Because, you know, I could see different ways where doing that would still give you the same VISWA, but for other reasons, the numbers might be wrong in both directions.
I have an SWR meter where one time I had a problem with the movement, and I had to put a new movement in. There's also a lot of variables, over.
Okay. It could be a movement, although I think one of them was digital that he used. I don't remember exactly, but Rocco, if you're still around. Was one of them analog and one of them digital?
I got better SWR when I set up the ground and made sure that every point in the HF system was grounded. Could ground and or counterpoise have anything to do with it?
Well, Well, yes. A proper counterpoise is required for a correct standing wave ratio. If you mess up the counterpoise, you're going to shift the resonance, you're going to shift the impedance. It's all going to go wonky. Now, will it do so in a multi-phasic sort of way, or just jump up higher and go through usually the same changes over frequency? I would think so, but it certainly would have a significant impact on the ultimate VNA sweep of the given antenna.
Comment?
Yes, what do you want to comment?
Yes, this is KD2UAH again, Rocco, but I'm mobile now. Like, I'm on my handheld. I just wanted to make sure that when you had asked me if they were digital and analog, that you had gotten my comment, and I said that they were both. Back to you. I'm sorry if you had heard me before.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a very noisy signal, so I didn't hear it. So I don't think it's a meter that stuck. But, you know, there are a lot of other things, electronics. And in watt meters, and standing wave ratios are not that simple. They are sensitive to different frequencies. They have to be calibrated across frequencies. Some components can go off and might give you kind of very strange frequency-related aberrations. So it'll be interesting to see if ultimately the solution to this entire puzzle is simply 2 watt meters that have somewhat degraded in similar fashion. So, Ed, K2GJE, and any other comments about the standing wave ratio meters?
Just that you can try different loads. If you have two dummy loads, you can put them in parallel to give you 25 ohms and get a 2-to-1. I think it's a good check to reverse the input and output. Then if you get a 2-to-1 each way, to show that maybe there's nothing wrong with the SWR meter over.
Okay, very good, Ed. Well, hopefully either Tony will lend him his nano VNA or get an inexpensive VNA. We'll see what happens. So thank you, Ed. Let's go to John, VDH. You wanted to make a comment, John?
Yeah, the comment I just wanted to make, if you're interested in non-directional beacons, and low frequency monitoring. I'm listening to Beacon FR on 407 kilohertz, and the location of that beacon, I found it right on the side of Seaford Oyster Bay. If anybody wants to see what one of these facilities look like, it's on the side of Seaford Oyster Bay, on the southbound side, right near Exit 10. There's a little shack there and two very tall telephone poles, and they're driving a center-fed dipole with open wire. The facility is not much to look at, but it's only a 25-watt beacon. And as I said, it's at 407 kilohertz, and it is a non-directional beacon. And it's in the approach path to Farmingdale Republic Airport. But I say, if you ever want to see what one of these facilities look like, you can just pass by there on Seaford Oyster Bay on the southbound side, right near Exit 10.
Okay, very good, John. The dipole, is it a full half wave?
Yeah, there are three conductors on each side, so it is. It might not be a full half wave, but it looks like it is definitely center fed because they are feeding it with open wire, and each side of the dipole is three conductors, so. So they may have it folded back. It may be a folded dipole on each side. as I say this, so that might account for the length, because it, I don't think a full halfway would probably be a little bit longer than that at 407 kilohertz. Go ahead. Yes, Wesley?
That's it.
Is there somebody else also? I cannot hear it from here, from Massachusetts, New York. 407, I put 407. I'm measuring with receiver. The only thing is that my antenna is not good. There. So it's 25 watts. How far you are from the beacon?
I'm right near exit 21 on Southern State. As a matter of fact, I can see WHLI's towers right by exit 20 from my roof. Seaford Oyster Bay, for me to get to there, I go to exit 28A, then I go north to exit 10. So I would say I'm about... I just say I'm about 13 to 14 miles. Go ahead.
Okay. Are you into very low frequency?
Well, I have my receiver is the NRD 515. It's a Japan Radio Company receiver, and essentially it'll tune down to zero. Below 100 kilohertz, the sensitivity drops off. But what I have an antenna. It's an active antenna made by a company called Low Wave, L-O-W-A-V-Z antenna. It's an active antenna, and then it's got a little matching box that has some amplifying elements in it. So the antenna is itself that I'm using is not very big, but being an active antenna, I do have a pretty good reception. I'm able to copy at night anyway. I can copy WWVB at 60 kilohertz, but you'd be surprised at the amount of interference from TV. TV sweeps down there because all the various different sweep speeds with high def TV causes a lot of interference. Go ahead.
10 to action. I'm listening on Wendell and Man, PSM 139. Papa, here I'm making. It's 50 hertz up to 31.5 megahertz. The other one would be Hewlett-Packard HP2586P, both of them are selective level meter. What I'm using for receiving is ground. So my antenna is connected directly to the ground with 10 feet of the number one electrical cable. I have a great reception, so I can hear, yes, the 60 kilohertz I can hear it and I have no problem, but 407 I cannot hear it at all. And the question that I have is, did anyone try, it was 2 weeks ago when I said, take the center connect wire from your PL connector and connect it to the ground, don't transmit, just listen to it. How good reception do you have nighttime when the 80 meters is open? Try that experiment. Enter
here. Okay, well, Wesley asked you a question. Unfortunately, I've been busy, the holidays and such, and anyone experiment along those lines?
CG2R1.
Yes, David.
Well, I tuned my radio all the way down to 30 kilohertz. I didn't hear any, like, broadcast or anything. I heard some noise. It was kind of noisy. You know, I tried to get the noise out of my head.
Okay, anyone else?
QSTP.
Yes, Chris.
I have not experimented on that, but on the same subject, a quick question. I've been looking for a beacon on the 2 meter band received here in Long Island. Does anyone know of one? I needed to calibrate the reference ejection board. I have never seen the phone.
Okay, can anyone help K2STP on this? He's looking for a 2 meter beacon.
Do they have listings on the internet?
Well, yeah, that's always my best answer, Google it. But I assume that Chris has tried that.
I haven't really come up with anything, but it's a lot of nonsense, stuff that's not there, not old, you know.
I remember taking a trip to W1AW and watching them send CW on a spark generator. I think it must have been a long wave signal.
Best on the beacon antenna.
Yes, please. Yes, Ed, you wanted to say something on the beacon antenna?
Yes, the beacon antenna is a three-wire folded dipole. It was very, very common in early amateur days. The one there for the beacon is nowhere near a half wave at 407 kilohertz. It's definitely shortened. But those antennas at their operating frequency are 600 ohms, and they were very, very easily fed years ago with homemade open wire line. It's a three-folded dipole, over.
Okay, very good. Someone was kind enough, John KD2BD, gave me a link in the chat room, so when I have a chance, I'll load up on my link to roy.ac2gs.com with the link of the pictures of the FR beacon so everyone can take a good look.
Yeah, comment?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense because when I look at the spacing of those two telephone poles, it definitely is not a half wave. So it is definitely those three wires, as you said, folded to make a folded dipole. And driving it with open wire does provide a very good match.
Okay, very good. I think we got through this particular conversation. Unless someone else has some comments to make about loafer signals and such. It's very experimental, but it's open to more and more amateur radio operators, and they're using all kinds of interesting antennas to try and get a signal.
One final comment.
Yeah, sure.
What might be a great topic for some future TechNet topic? Is the whole subject of navigation signals, especially the VHF navigation signals, the operations of VOR transmitters or ILS systems. I do a little reading on it, but especially the ILS systems, they're very interesting, and a lot of interesting things are going to them. So it might make, especially if somebody has a pilot's license, would make a very interesting topic for TechNet. Right?
Yes, Ed. What would you like to tell us?
I might be interested to have a ILS just a landing system. It's a rather complicated system involving multiple systems, so I'm not sure we would
Okay, Ed. I think you probably could run something like that. I know that you're deeply interested. Your son is a pilot, and you probably know a lot more than most of us. But you know, it's up to you. But I would be fascinated to learn more about it. I know next to nothing about either aeronautical or navigational, radios.
Me too.
Well, I leave that up to you, Ed. Hopefully you could have a little bit stronger signal. You're about 70% noise. If you want to do it tonight, that's great. If you want to do it next week, if you want to do it next month, it's open to you. I leave it to you to decide when you feel comfortable doing it.
Give me one second.
I'll give you three.
All right, this is better, WB2EAV.
Yes, much better, Ed.
All right, so if we're talking about air traffic control, it covers quite a bit of territory. The question was about VHF. So we're going to start with the 118 to 136 megahertz band, which is mostly used for communication. Now, a large part of navigation is through air traffic control. Here's something to think about. If you think there are no traffic cops in the sky, you couldn't be more wrong. They are watching you constantly. And many a pilot, after pulling some nonsense, after he lands, air traffic control gives them a phone number to call, which just might be a question of, what was that about? Up to some serious stuff. But in any event, all commercial traffic is under positive control by air traffic control. You're never flying on your own. You're just following directions. If you want to fly on your own, that is visual flight rules, VFR, and you can only do it in good weather, have to be able to see the, you know, the other planes, the ground, the horizon, and even then there are rules. Any comments? Alright, the next item that comes up, was mentioned, was ILS, Instrument Landing System. ILS is in the VHF band, that there is a channel assigned to a runway, and there are two parts. There's localizer and there's glide slope. What the localizer does is it sends out a signal that an indicator on the panel of the aircraft will give you an indication of when you are on runway centerline. Similarly, there is a 3-degree glide slope, and again, you get a cross-point indicator with two needles, one horizontal, one vertical, that when you have a nice plus sign in the middle of the thing, you're right on a 3-degree glide slope on runway center line, which will bring you down the path. Now, I'm not 100% sure about the signals in space, but I did work on a different landing system, the microwave landing system, which was supposed to replace ILS, but never did. Roy, do you think there's any interest now in getting into how this stuff works or not yet?
I think that would be interesting. I think the audience would like to hear it.
The way the microwave landing system worked is you had an array, a broadside array of antennas. At the localizer equivalent was at the end of the runway. There was a batch of antennas. Now, this was actually running at 5 gigahertz. And there was a batch of antennas. And what it would do is it was a commutated array. The left-hand antenna would transmit, then the one next to it would transmit, the one next to it would transmit. And then when it got to the end, it would start again. Now what happens is, it was called a Doppler system. Let's say, for the sake of argument, you're completely off course, coming at 90 degrees out, you'll have this, assuming you can hear the signal, which is questionable, but just speaking academically, you would see this thing coming towards you, stop, coming towards you, and there's a Doppler shift on the carrier frequency, and you would get this Doppler effect. Whereas if you're on glide slope, sorry, if you're on center line, let me drop it. If you're on center line, it would just basically have no net Doppler effect because it's perpendicular to you. It's not coming towards you or going away from you. Now, if you're a couple of degrees off, there is an element of it coming towards you or going away from you that the further off you are, the larger the Doppler shift, and it would reflect that in telling you how far you are center line. And it would do the same thing with the glide slope. Now, advantages of the microwave landing system, particularly for glide slope, was you were not limited to one. You could program in the glide slope you wanted, and it allowed sectional approaches that you could come in at different angles and the like, but the FAA played around with it, fiddled, diddled, and fiddled with it for so long that they said, you know what, we see GPS coming out soon, so forget about it, right?
Okay, very good. I hate to kind of throw something out of left field, but it's been kind of nudging me. It's not really navigation, but still. Aeronautical radios, they use amplitude modulation as their means of transmitting. I totally understand why it shouldn't be frequency modulated, but what's the rationale against something like single sideband? It gives you a lot more channels of communication.
This system came out in the 1930s. Those other modulation techniques did not yet exist. There was no FM. There was no single sideband. But as the radios improved, they got it down to 25 kilohertz channels. And there really would be no drive going to more channels. There seemed to be plenty of channels. So to narrow it down and tighten up the channels, I see no interest in. But it basically is legacy, that they came up with the system in the 30s and they just stuck with AM. I don't think there's been any tremendous push to move it towards FM or sideband. Now remember, sideband, the problem with clarity, in air traffic control, being understood is a matter of life and death. And there is tremendous effort going in to optimize clarity. And I assume limiting the frequency response of the transmitted channel is a big step in entirely the wrong direction. As far as FM is concerned, you bring up a good point. I don't see any real benefits or downgrades if they were to consider changing to FM, but it would cost an incredible amount of money to change over the entire system and need a really, really strong benefit to justify it.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul. I just want to add before Paul that my understanding was that the thing that they don't like about FM is because it has full quieting, it blocks other signals. So, we hear it almost every time we're on our repeaters. When two people talk, you either can't hear either of the two people, or you might hear one but not the other. Whereas with amplitude modulation and even single sideband, you can hear when people talk over each other. At least you can tell that they're talking over each other. So that was the rationale that's generally given when I ask people why FM wasn't the thing. But they usually say that the AM was both because it didn't block out and because it was a narrower band for more channels. But, Paul, you want to say something?
One word, Canary. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, Roy. And yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to say. With FM, you have the capture effect. So So, for instance, well, especially like, you know, they kept this with the space program. If you were doing a spacewalk, you have two people out there doing a spacewalk, and then plus you have somebody inside the space station watching them, and they're communicating back and forth to one another. If you had FM and one guy is talking and something happens, that they won't be able to, you know, with AM, you know, you could just chime in and you could realize that, you know, somebody else is there. That might be a problem. Capture effect, you'll lose that. You know, you could be going on and on talking about something, and meanwhile, there could be a disaster right over your shoulder. So I assume that they kept that as